Velkommen til Berørt. Der i dette afsnit tager jeg til selveste St. Paul's Cathedral i London, som mange af os har besøgt som turister. Herinde sidder en af Englands flittigst benyttede debattører, som gang på gang formår at vise, at kirker og tro ikke kun er noget gammelt og støvet, men i høj grad er noget, der kommer vores dagligdag ved. Paula Gutter, hedder hun, er teolog, og efter at have haft job i blandt andet det britiske bibelselskab, er hun nu ansvarlig for indholdet af de kurser og andet, som man kan tage ind i den kendte katedral. Hun er såkaldt Canon Chancellor. Gennem de senere år har hun skrevet en række bøger, der har sat dagsordner, især om det faktum, at vi har kroppe. Det lyder som en selvfølge, men hun mener, at både kirken og den spirituelle verden har glemt det. Ved at læse hendes bøger, og nu talt med hende, står det langt mere klart for mig, hvor enkelt det kan være igen at få skabt en sammenhæng mellem det, vi tror, og det liv, vi lever med vores kroppe nu og her. Det handler bare om at tale om det, vi erfarer i vores liv, ganske enkelt. For hende blev det tydeligt, da hun ventede sit første barn, og kunne mærke, at det var et mirakel. Sådan havde jeg det også. Når man har båret og født et barn, ved man, hvad et mirakel er. Netop det, at kvinders kroppe faktisk bærer liv, og dermed er så tydeligt til stede i vores liv, får hende til at skrive og tale om, at nu i vores tid, hvor flere og flere kvinder taler mere frit, så vil kirken og den måde, vi taler om tro på, forandre sig. Kroppen vil komme mere til orde, håber hun, og slår et slag for afskaffelsen af umagelige kirkebænke.
I would like to ask you the first question I also asked all of my guests. When did you first, or most recently, you can choose, get berørt af Gud, get moved or touched by God?
Well, I can remember my first time very, very clearly. I grew up in a Christian family, and my family were quite conservative Protestants, and therefore my experience of faith was of a very rational faith. Church was a white building without any colour in it, and kind of a classic kind of Calvinist Protestantism. And I went to church because my parents expected me to do, but I never really, it didn't touch me. I never had an experience. And when I was an undergraduate, and so once I got to being, and I was 19 at the time, I went to Oxford University. And I went to New College, Oxford, on my first ever weekend in Oxford. I went to New College, Oxford for Evensong because I'd heard it was going to be beautiful and I thought it would be lovely. And it was. And what was really interesting is in the middle of Evensong, I suddenly had the most dramatic religious experience in which I knew God was with me, which I felt held and supported by God's love in the middle of beautiful choral Evensong. And that was my moment where I went, oh, this makes sense now, because faith had always been a very rational thing. Yeah. As a child, and nothing had ever touched me. And then in the middle of this really beautiful chapel with really beautiful music, I suddenly had this sense of being touched by God. So it's great for me now to go to choral Evensong in St. Paul's Cathedral every day, because I am upheld by that beautiful music and a beautiful space. So, yeah, that was my first.
You've written a series of books, but the four books I've been most affected by are the ones here. They're right here. You've written Body, Biblical Spirituality for the Whole Body, and you've written Everyday God and Journey to the Manger and Phoebe. And the latter is actually translated into Danish.
I've got a copy of the Danish version on my shelf with great pride.
In my opinion, you're able to hold as well as write about what is usually actually quite a big void between our everyday life and the core writings of Christianity. We seem to see this as a distance between these two. And you even write about our bodies, our bodies being a living part of our faith. And that is, for me, extraordinary. And I want to know what made you start focusing on the body?
The very first book I wrote, well, no, it's not quite the first book, but one of the first significant book that I wrote was in the same series as Everyday God, and it's called Meaning is in the Waiting. And I wrote it just after I gave birth to my eldest daughter, who's now 21. And while I was writing the book, and it was a series of reflections around waiting in the Bible, I also reflected on what it had been like to be someone who waited for a baby to be born, and which, of course, is the most embodied experience you will ever have. And I realized that my spirit, in writing that book, that my spiritual life was intimately bound up with my body. It's not exclusively true that women are more aware of their bodies, but there are things that happen when you're a woman that does make you more aware of your body, like giving birth, like kind of menstrual cycles, where you can't get away from the fact that our bodies shape who we are, they shape our identity. And I was acutely aware at that point that I wasn't aware of any Christian theology books that took that seriously. So it started about 20 years ago with a desire to try and do exactly what you were describing, kind of pull together our everyday lives with our understanding of theology. As I became aware of that, I realized that actually I bring a voice to that study, which is a different kind of a voice to a male voice. You come with different experience. And the reason why I wanted to start writing and have a wider audience is I realized that I wasn't alone. I did talks before I did writing. So I used to travel around the country lecturing, giving talks on various different aspects. And it became really clear in people's questions that there was something that they were looking for that wasn't available in a lot of books. And it wasn't solely women. It's people who are interested in the connectedness between theology and life. Obviously there's quite a lot of women who are interested in that, but there are also men interested in that area as well. And as I was doing the research for the book called Body, one of the things that I became really convinced about is that in 1 Corinthians, Paul is exploring the body, and he does it through a number of chapters. I mean, it depends where you want to start, but I would say between about 1 Corinthians 4 and 1 Corinthians 15, Paul explores our bodies, Christ's body, participation in the body, death and resurrection of the body, our resurrection. And it's as though he wanders around a subject. Yeah. And the subject is bodies. And I had never read, so I've been reading Paul for 20, 30 years. And I've never read anyone who noticed that bodies were central to 1 Corinthians. So for me, I wanted to say, look, here's a theme that we've been ignoring. It's genuinely there in Paul, and it isn't explored by people. So I feel as though my own experience as a woman brings a lens, and the lens is what helps me see something in Paul that otherwise people haven't seen in Paul. One of the things we do wrong when we talk about spirituality is the word spirituality implies that we do it without our bodies. It's something that we split our spirits away, and it's a thing that we do, but it's not an embodied experience. And for me, kind of the key question of the book is, what does it look like if we actually have an embodied spirituality, which means how we take care of our bodies, that actually taking time off to rest when we're tired is an act of Christian spirituality, which often is not kind of explored within spiritual writings.
Actually, the word spirituality,
it's the wrong word. Yes.
What word should we use?
It's difficult, isn't it? And that's where you have the legacy of the Christian tradition, which has not taken body seriously, is all the language we have. Thank you.
In the book, you quote, it's Psalm 139, and that's about God creating us. And you quote, which I never really read in this term, you said, you knit me together in my mother's womb, which is very, I immediately get the same picture as you do, because you recall how you as a child, and again, you imagine God, and I quote, seated comfortably on his throne with two large knitting needles, steadily knitting humanity into life. And you could even, as you write, hear the click of the needles. And I just love that picture, because it's just like one my grandmother did, and she taught me, and my mother does, and I knit a lot. Do you knit?
I do, yes. I do.
But it's just the picture of this God knitting like I do. What do you think it's done for you to have this picture of God?
It introduces a feminine aspect to God, which, you know, I know you have to be careful about how you do it, but I think people often omit the very clearly feminine images of God that already exist in the Bible. And for me, it's about noting them, recognizing them, and drawing attention to them, because there are all sorts of fascinating feminine images of God. And one of the other ones that I really like is the description of God as a mother bear.
Yes.
Who someone's stolen her cubs, and Mother Bear God is going to fall on them like a mother would. And as a mother, I know that rage, you know, touch my children and I'm coming for you. Yes. And I think of that as a kind of an image for God. So you've got all sorts of kind of really rich images. Another one I really like, it won't surprise you, is in 1 Peter. At the start of 1 Peter, the Greek says, although our translations normally translate it differently, God has given birth to us again. So so it's normally translated as God has given us a new birth, which is a kind of a slightly more distant one.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, but the idea of God giving birth to us again is, again, kind of a profoundly feminine image. And it's those kind of things that I like to observe and draw attention to, that there are all sorts of descriptions of God, and some of them are peculiarly female, and it's worth just noting them. I think
you're right on page 96 actually about Mary. You write, Mary is an inspiring character and one who inspires me more and more as time goes on. What is important to me, however, is that she was a woman like me. She faced the same challenges I do, but with remarkable grace and courage. And she experienced some of the things that I have experienced. She worried for her child as I worry for mine. What does that do to you?
It makes me feel as though there is someone who has gone before me in the faith who understands, with whom I have a connection. And again, as you describe it, it's that recognizing that there are people who are foremothers in the faith, who we can have as role models, because often, again, the church is very male dominated, and the big role models that are held up are male characters. Of course they are. So to have female role models is a lovely thing, and it gives you that sense that we're not alone. We don't have to tread this path as though we've never been here before. There are women who have done it before us, and we can follow them. People say to me, do you believe in miracles? And my answer is, well, largely yes, because I gave birth to 2 children. And that is a miraculous. I know there's lots of science behind it, but then there's lots of science behind other miracles too. And right at the heart for me is that there are things that we do every day. We don't give birth to babies every day, but, you know, we do.
Someone
does. And they are miraculous. It is a miraculous, wonderful, mysterious thing. And therefore, if that miraculous, wonderful, mysterious thing can happen, surely other things can as well. I've been a feminist since the 1980s, and noticing how it waxes and wanes. And on a more depressed day, I say, actually, maybe it won't make a difference because it will change again, and women's voices will be harder to hear again, because that happened very much. I don't know if it was the same in Denmark, but in Britain, after kind of the mid-1990s, feminism retreated again in Britain and is now coming back. And it's rather lovely. So I now, both of my daughters would now self-identify as feminists, but they wouldn't have been able to 10 years before. It would have been too difficult to do. So on a bad day, I think, well, it will just retreat and then we'll have to come back again. But on a good day, I think that the number of female voices who are beginning to speak and beginning to speak from their own experience will begin to shift and change how we talk about our faith, how we talk about spirituality, that word we don't like, but how we talk about the whole experience of Christian faith. And it will begin to make a difference. And it will begin to make a difference in a really good way.
Well, it also changed our relationship with the church, because at least in Denmark, the church is not very bodily. The church is, I mean, the Protestant church, as you've grown up in, is very sort of like the word.
Yes.
The word, the Bible, it's that's the core of Protestant faith.
Yes, no, and I sincerely hope that it will begin to change our churches. I mean, at the very basic, I don't know if Denmark is the same, but pews in Britain are the most uncomfortable things to sit on that you could possibly imagine. And that feels to me as though that symbolises our attitude towards bodies and churches, that you shouldn't be comfortable in church. And I would say quite the opposite. If we are going to come and encounter the God who created us, we can at least be comfortable while we do it. Because bodies are important, and if you're uncomfortable, you aren't going to be able to worship in the same kind of way. And I think
it's the opposite way around, that you're supposed to be uncomfortable in order to be reminded of your humility. I mean, that's the whole point, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, I think so. That's right. And I think that's, personally, I think that's nonsense. So it would be lovely if we could begin to start paying attention within worship to our bodies and what that means. And I mean, we have historically, of course, in that we stand up for certain things, we sit down for certain things, we kneel on occasion. But I wonder whether in worship, if we paid more attention to our bodies, then actually how we worship itself would begin to change.
Why don't we just start talking more about our bodies in the Christian world? What is holding us back?
I have no idea. It's very, very interesting. There is definitely a resistance. And I was very disappointed when I wrote my book, Body, that it was very largely ignored. It's hard to know what makes people so hesitant about it. I mean, I think there's a lot of anxiety in churches at the moment because of a drop of attendance, therefore less money in the church. And I think that it's not just about power, it's also about a continuance of something that has been around for a long time. And I, like you, feel less attached to the external things of church, like ordination and church buildings, although ironically, I now work in one of the biggest church buildings that ever there was. but nevertheless, for me, if the Church of England couldn't survive because they didn't have enough money, it wouldn't affect my faith, because my faith would still be vibrant. As I've said, I hope that with an increase of female voices working in this area, that what we will do is we will start talking about these subjects much more widely and become much more comfortable talking about them.
And how will that be good for the men and the women and for Christianity?
Because we will notice things that have been ignored for many years, or overlooked, maybe not. Ignored is probably too active a word. It's probably just overlooked, not noticed. And we will draw people's attention back into exactly what was going on.
So, Paula, you're probably writing a book right now I don't know if you are, but if you are, what will the book be about? And when will I be able to add it to my bookshelf?
I've got three books coming out. One of them will be called The Women of Holy Week. And what I did is I wrote 9 stories about the women who were there during the last week of Jesus's life, starting on Palm Sunday and ending on Ascension Day. So I start with 2 women who I make up because they're not there in the story. So a woman who was there on Palm Sunday, and then the wife of the lawyer who asked Jesus the question about the most important thing in the law. And then I wrote a story about one each of those. And then I wrote a story about the widow in the temple putting in her 2 coins, and then the woman who anointed Jesus, and then the women who were there at the Last Supper, the women who were at the crucifixion, Mary at the tomb, the 2 disciples on the road to Emmaus, which I think one of them was a woman, and then I think I've got them all, and then Mary, mother of Jesus, for the Ascension. And so it's 9 stories of imagining what it was like to be women in the last week of Jesus's life. So that's one book that you might be interested in. The other one I'm in the middle of, but will finish soon, is another one like Phoebe, and it's called Lydia. And what I'm doing a similar thing, but looking at Philippi and placing Lydia in the middle of a story in Philippi. Oh, the third one is Journaling the Psalms. It's something completely different. It's going to be beautifully produced by Hodder Faith, and it's with lots of space for writing your own notes in and doodling, and introducing 15 key psalms, and so that people can reflect through doodling and writing and praying their way through 15 key psalms.
That sounds wonderful. Well, I'm really grateful for your time. Thank you so much, Paula Gooder. And on my webpage, which is www.charlotteroweth.dk, you can find the titles of the book we've talked about, and I'll put out links for your homepage as well. And I wish you all the best, and your daughters and your husband and your whole community in London. And I hope we'll meet again. So thank you very much, Paula Gooder.
Thank you, Charlotte. It's been lovely talking to you.